previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Nothing you've ever heard before.
Oh, cool. Like what?
I don't know. How can I explain if you've never heard it?
You can try.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 192 for the week of February 19th, 2018. I am Cafeteria Served Gatorade David T. Cole, and I'm here with Surge John General Sarah D. Bunting.
Beat the rush.
Oh, no.
Crystal Waters impersonator Tari Ariano.
Respect my ballet neck top.
And chunky VHS cassette Stephanie Green.
Wow, what a difference. Blockbuster Video.
All right, so full disclosure, I'm a little high on drugs. Legal prescription drugs. So, with that in mind, there is site business.
All right, we're not having minis again this week. They will return next week. So look out for that. More information to come.
Look out for the minis because they're very, very small. You might trip over them.
Okay.
Oh my God. It will not surprise anyone to learn that our lead topic is everything sucks. Before we get into it, welcome back to the guest chair, Stephanie Green.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yay!
Everything Sucks is the Netflix com set in the mid-90s. I forget. We are told exactly what year it is, but I forget which.
96.
There you go.
September 27th, 1996.
Okay. Yes, we asked Stephanie Green to come back and discuss this with us, first, because we love having her as a guest, but second, because she might be able to provide some documentary commentary on this era of high school life that we oldsters would not be able to provide. Stephanie, you referred to this before we started recording as a cheap Freaks and Geeks knockoff. I kind of agree. Would you care to elaborate?
Sure. Okay. So first, let me establish my bona fides. So in September 27, 1996, I was exactly 1 month away from turning 14. So I'm pretty sure these kids are supposed to be like exactly my age, which means they're now all 35. Yeah. So I actually wasn't in high school until 97 because whatever. But anyway, I was there. I get it. So I am an authority on whether or not this would be accurate.
And
self-appointed authority. So some parts of it were accurate. The soundtrack is all music from that time period. You know, there are mentions of Tori Amos, who I remember being pretty into as a freshman in high school. The fashion, I'd say mostly they got it right for 96, although I did spot some stuff that was like too early 90s, like a girl with a huge scrunchie. I'm like, I get that they're in Oregon. I don't even think people in Oregon were wearing like giant scrunchies in 96.
Yeah, what is this, Canada?
What is this, Ontario? You know? and there were other things like one of the kids says janky, and I'm like, no one said janky in 1996. Or the principal at one point goes, you think, to a lady. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that wasn't a saying in 1996. So I have lots of little nitpicky things like that. But my main problem with this is that they're trying to do Freaks and Geeks, like heartfelt coming of age stories without while also tapping into like the Stranger Things vibe of there's three awkward young teenage boys and an awkward young teenage girl. So they're just, I mean, it feels like a marketing machine. Like they're just trying to like check as many boxes as they can to get people to like jump on board and have this be the newest Netflix obsession, but it's not, I don't think it's well executed enough. And I don't think there's enough they're there. I mean, it's a lot of references, a lot of 90s references, like, in case you forgot. Yeah. It's 1996, guys. Alanis Morissette, Columbia House, Tori Amos, Coolio,
Spin Doctors,
All That in a Bag of Chips, Spin Doctors,
Trees.
Although I will say, I was watching this with captions and I learned the words to Two Princes, and turns out I'd had those words all wrong for the last 20 years. So, you know, it can't just, if you're going to make something that really resonates with people, the nerds can't just be like discussing nerdy references with each other. There has to be something deeper and more universal there that I don't, that Freaks and Geeks has that, and this does not, in my opinion.
Yeah. My main question about this show is like, who it's for. I assume you are who it's for.
It is for me.
I mean, that's who they intend. But yeah, when you're, but at the same time, like, I was watching it, I was like, oh, okay, it's like Degrassi, it's for kids. Like, it has that same unpolished, bad performance, weird cinematography, like all of the roughness of original Degrassi, not the one that has been airing on Teen Nick of late. But then there's boobs in it, so it's not for kids. Like, it's just, it feels like something that was made on a very small budget by a bunch of people who were just enthusiasts in Portland or whatever, and then Netflix bought it and like maybe stuck some titles on it, and now we're watching it, and it feels very amateurish to me.
Yeah, I mean, there were two problems, and it's like, first of all, I didn't go to high school in this time period, and I also didn't go to a high school with the opposite sex, so sometimes it's like I have no idea whether this is actually speaking to anything, because the only, you know, quote boy that we ever saw was our 60-year-old physics teacher, and then like your siblings when you got home. Like, that it was not like, some parts of this experience are like, you know, at the time I chafed about it, but now I'm always relieved that it was just us ladies in some ways. But it's also like that they're standing back to make sure that you appreciate how many 90s references and how 90s the references are that they're making. And that settles down a little after the pilot, but then it's just slow. Like, now they have no excuse for how slowly the scenes play. Like, within each scene, there's all this like dead air and new actors not jumping their lines. And a couple of these actors are going to be good when they have a little more experience, but right now we're just not great for whatever reason, and it's not edited very well, and it just seemed like parts of other things, like Stephanie said, like Stranger Things, Freaks and Geeks. There was a little bit of not Degrassi, but like early 90210, like Learning and Growing 90210.
Earnest 90s.
Yeah, before they figured out that nobody cared about that shit and started Summer of Deceiving. But yeah, and it was also like, I don't know, like the mid-90s culturally, like I was there for that part, like for, you know, the music, which some of it was just really a disaster. And I don't know. I got to the end of the second one. I couldn't figure out who the actor who plays Kate reminded me of. Once I figured out that it was a friend of mine, I was like, okay, now I no longer need to watch this anymore. But Tara's right on. Also, I just don't know who this is for, and I'm not sure the show does either.
I read something where they were talking to the creator, and he was describing this as, it's Stranger Things, except there's no demons. Like, no, this is Freaks and Geeks. You're just trying to make Freaks and Geeks, like, own up to it.
Yeah. It's still like Freaks and Geeks, the new class. Like, okay, nice try.
Like, at the end of the day, the math for this is, I could have watched the second half of this show, or I could have started a Freaks and Geeks rewatch, which I'm much... But, and it's not because, like, that is the 80s versus the 90s. Like, Freaks and Geeks wasn't... Look, it's 80s product placement. Like, this one is, like, all the Gatorade labels are facing the camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, they're serving Gatorade in the cafeteria for some reason. it wasn't like that. Not that I really care in this day and age. I think people just have to live with product placement like that in a TV show if they want TV shows these days. I was reading a review from The Guardian. Do you mind if I just read like one paragraph from this?
Please.
Which, okay. Set in boring Oregon, Oregon, Oregon. Everything Sucks is the melodrama of being a teenager stuck in a small town. The writing is a little thin. The ideas lack in originality. But wait, is that They Might Be Giants on the soundtrack? Is that a Discman? Are those mom's jeans? Everything Sucks is predicated exclusively on nostalgia, with a scattershot, pictorial approach to romancing the past, as if it had been used by the pinboard of Child of the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that it's predicated only on nostalgia. And that was my impression, too. It did not make me nostalgic at all. And I was a nerdy kid in high school, or almost high school at this time. I was in the marching band. I was on the debate team. I also... policy debate, I should clarify, because that's way cooler. Way cooler than Lincoln Douglas. I wasn't like a forensics nerd. Come on. And, you know, like you'd think something about like, yeah, I wasn't in the AV club, but I was on yearbook. You'd think like this would be like, oh, this reminds me of high school. But it didn't make me feel anything because the scenarios were not, I don't know, it wasn't tapping into the emotion and the wretchedness in some ways of being a high school student. Whereas Freaks and Geeks does.
Yeah, they had that ear for like that it's like more an accumulation of tiny humiliations and that things aren't exactly so black and white all the time. And it also had the benefit of like being a drama in terms of its length that was funny. And this maybe should have tried to do that, but no, because I don't think they have that same ear that Paul Feig had for any of this. So,
totally. Also, I think the cast of Freaks and Geeks was allowed to eat all the sugar they wanted during this show. And I think all the actors from this show weren't, because they seem to be just sort of drifting through this show. Like there is no...
They are sluggish.
Yeah, like they seem like they're a little doped up for what they should be doing. Like... the only screaming that happens is pretend acting screaming in the drama club cafeteria impromptu plays.
That was one of my only like smile moments was when that poor kid
I would have punched those people so hard if I had the means or courage to.
I liked the fat kid coming to forlornly retrieve his corn dog that they used as a dagger.
Oh, that was funny.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was
okay. That was good.
Yeah, but that was like the one moment like that. Like, where's the rest of that? Like that Freaks and Geeks seemed to be like chock full of that kind of stuff.
Because it lacks it's not trying to observe anything. It's just trying to make references. It's like the bad version, like you said, Freaks and Geeks didn't feel like it was a nostalgia jerk off session. It was, which is the case with for the little I've seen of, for example, the Goldbergs, which is like, remember the 80s or the Wedding Singer, same thing, which is like the movie version of that, where it's just like, we'll just mention a bunch of stuff. Like, if you're going to be this hardcore, it's 1996, make it 1996 and be precise, because they were everywhere. Yeah. Like you said that, you know, the scrunchie was one reference, but like the drama club girl, at one point she's wearing like Courtney Love Kinder Whore gear, and then the next day she's Gwen Stefani. It's like those were years apart and no one was still talking about whether Ironic was bad 2 years after that album came out. Like the, you know, Swingers reference too in episode 4 is like that movie had just come out and it would have not played in boring Oregon. Yeah.
And that kid would have not been able to see
and
it.
And the Spin Doctors, like they were I mean, they were in, you know, dry ice by that point. Like 94, they're everywhere. 96, they couldn't get arrested.
Yeah.
Is Kinder Whore a thing? Is that a term?
Yeah.
Okay. I love that term, by the way. Thank you.
I didn't make it. No, I did not make it up. That was the description for her style.
What did you guys think of the storyline of the coming out storyline of the Kate character?
I thought it was not subtle enough. I don't know. So I can only base this on my high school experience and what it, I don't know what it was like to be a gay kid in my high school, but I was in the Gay Straight Alliance. And the fact that we had a Gay Straight Alliance in 1997 in my not particularly progressive high school tells me that I don't think people are scrawling dyke on lockers necessarily in most high schools that aren't in the Deep South or whatever. I mean, no offense, Deep South, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I don't think in this town in Oregon, it's like, hey, homo, and all lesbo was actually a thing that they said. I think that it probably would suck to be this girl who is closeted lesbian 15-year-old, her dad's the principal, but like there's a subtler way to tell that story that this show is just not capable of even. Okay, I'm basically done.
I was just gonna say the person who was victimizing her would not be the drama club.
Yeah,
no.
Like that would be a person who would be going out of her way to be like cool about everything.
Of course. Hey, I don't understand the general social dynamic of this high school. I'm not saying it has to be jocks and nerds and cheer, like, you know, that wasn't how my high school was. And I don't think many high schools follow that exact thing, but I don't understand that the cool drama kids and then hate the AV kids who they work closely with. And the cool drama kids also include the kids who make the sets, which in my experience would not be the case. And, also, these nerds, the supposed nerds, the three boys have like zero sense of self-preservation and make a really embarrassing video that they then broadcast the whole school. And like, this isn't adding up. It just rings false to me.
Yeah. When you're in the nerd clan, you are always the first one in the room and like you try to be the first one out so you can get to wherever you're going.
Yeah,
before the kids that want to beat you up get there, and you don't make waves. Yeah, that whole video thing. I'm like, no, that's not the way you've survived.
No, that was an idea someone in the writer's room had that they wanted to do.
Yeah,
it wasn't. It does not at all ring true for what a real kid would do then or now.
And like, I don't know, in what school are the? I don't know. Like the drama kids are their own ecosystem, and they don't, and then like freshman nerds are trying to deploy self-cloaking devices at all times. Like it wanted to be heartwarming, but it had not compassion for its characters. I don't, you know, it wouldn't go that far. It just had no like, didn't you people go to high school?
It was like the campfire that is like barely still on the morning after, you know, like it's like where's the fire? Like it's just like it didn't seem like it was alive nearly as much as it should have been, considering there's all these kids going through one of the worst moments of like times of their lives, you know, like you could have some shitty experiences as an adult, but when you look back at your time in school and like all the shit you were going through mentally and physically, like you're like, how the fuck did I survive that and not go mad? Like if that happened every 20 years, like we would be shitting a brick right now waiting for that next one to come along. How the Vulcans as a race with their every 7 year pong far survive. It doesn't make sense, guys. I think what we're learning.
That took a turn.
What we're learning from this show is that maybe we should look back at the reality of Star Trek and that the Vulcans as a race should not have survived evolution. Thank you very much. That ends my contribution.
I mean, there's that just makes me feel like there are any number of better, more accurate, true to life ways for everyone to spend their time than on Everything Sucks. For example, the song Grade 9. Or an episode of Star Trek, the original series, or an episode or a Freaks and Geeks rewatch like Dave suggested. Like, this is just not.
Or the one and only season of Hindsight, the late and lamented by me VH1 show where a woman who's about to get married is sent back in time 20 years to her own like immediate post-college life. And it's a very it's like a similar kind of thing, but much more precise and better done and not as, you know, viscerally painful a period of time in a person's life to watch. You know, she's like in her 20s in New York. And so that it tragically was renewed and then unrenewed. But you can still find it on Amazon and iTunes. And it has a lot of the same music, in fact.
That sounds good.
Oh, last thought on this. For headline writers around the world, if you can't say Everything Sucks doesn't suck, don't bother doing that in your headlines, because when you have headlines that say everything sucks, but this one kind of doesn't sometimes, that's a bad headline. I've read that headline 6 times so far today. Oof. And I'm just like, guys, don't force it. Mm-mm. don't need to do it. Not everything has to, you know, I know they laid it out there for you, but it only laid it out there for you. And it works if it's a total disaster. And this one just happens to be boring.
Yeah.
To go around the dial. First up, Tara Ariano.
Just a few quick thoughts about the end of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend season 3. It just aired its finale on Friday. This season has been a real departure as they have tried to grapple in a more realistic way with mental illness, not making it cute or funny at all. As Rebecca has received a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, and has been, you know, addressing that and trying to break her old patterns and finding out how the diagnosis fits in with some of the things that she's done over the first two and part of the third season. They have really written themselves into a corner with this finale, which, in case people haven't seen it, I won't spoil. But it's a big swing. I'm curious to see how they're going to extricate themselves from it in season 4. I assume they have a plan. But there really have been some amazing songs that have really served the narrative. In the finale in particular, the great one, Paula's song about childbirth that does not sugarcoat what the experience is like. It's really funny. The one where Nathaniel and Rebecca sing that nothing is ever anybody's fault, as she tries to get out of something by pleading insanity. And then, you know, has to decide whether that's the right way to go or not based on her own, you know, travails and what she's learned over the year. It's been a real journey. I admire how ambitious the show is. Not everything has worked, but I feel like they do a good job of pushing where the show can go instead of falling back on stuff that's worked in the past.
Yeah, they do a good job of pushing it, but they do not do a good job of building transitions between state 1 and state 2.
No,
everything like that happens true. So fast on the show that none of it seems like it really should have happened or earned. But if they have only so many episodes to cover the ground they want to cover.
Yeah, they had a character get pregnant toward the end of the season and they didn't want to, you know, follow her through the entire pregnancy. So it jumps from her finding out she's pregnant to basically being about to deliver.
Right.
That was that episode. Anyway, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, still a good show. It's not like anything else on television. So for that reason only, it's a real peak TV treasure, as they say. And for my plug, I'm going to mention Bride and Doom took a week off, but Married at First Sight is back. And so are we, discussing the latest, and the couple rankings make a big, big change. Ooh. So if you've been listening along, holy moly, things are really doing a lot of switcheroos this season. So Bride and Doom, the Married at First Sight podcast, check it out.
Stephanie, your turn.
Okay. I feel like I have to talk about The Bachelor. so I'm going to. First, I'm going to talk about Ari. So I feel like people hate Ari. I don't know if you guys have been watching this season or what you think about him. I don't hate him. He's the dumb, like really, really dumb, sweet-natured Dutchman that I never knew I wanted, and actually still I'm not totally sure that I want, but like, on the one hand, I find myself just gaping at the fact that he's able to function. So poor is he at making decisions, using judgment, talking. But then I think, on the other hand, maybe he's just so laid back, he doesn't care that his entire affect makes him come off as like barely there, which I would actually kind of respect. But in any case, unlike past Bachelors,
I feel like social media has been like all over him, like really hates him.
And yeah.
Like, how do you hate that guy? It's like hating Grage.
Yeah. The impression I've gotten more is that he's boring than that he's bad.
He's boring, but like, there have been lots of boring Bachelors. Yes. Like Chris Sewell's was boring. Sean Lowe was boring, and he's like, you know, one of the success stories. So, but like, unlike past Bachelors who I actively hated, like I hated Jake Pavelka, Ben Flanick, Juan Pablo. I actually kind of hated Ben Higgins too, I'll be honest, but I don't ascribe to him any, I don't ascribe to Ari any malicious intent. I think he's probably a nice, if extremely shallow man. He's like a well-meaning, kind of uninteresting guy who likes pretty younger women, and the end. Like, that's it. So anyway, I wish him well, I guess. But the thing that really made this season watchable was the women, because there were so many just nutteroos on this season. And like Crystal, oh God, I was so devastated when Crystal, that crazy jerk, was sent packing a few weeks ago. And then Becca, the 22-year-old nanny, was also sent away. And, you know, all the interesting ones are now falling to the wayside. But one woman who has made it to the final three as of last night is Lauren B, who I think I said on Twitter. Another Lauren B. And she is like the lorniest B of all Lauren's B. She's just the dullest. I mean, when I say she might be the dullest contestant to ever grace this franchise, that is not easily achieved. I mean,
should we try to guess what she does for a living?
I'm not even sure. Like, if I had to guess, I would say sells software, something like that, you know,
marketing. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Social media marketing, something like that. Mm-hmm. She has literally, I'm not throwing around the word literally nothing to say. Like, she goes entire episodes staring mutely into the distance, like waiting to be proposed to. And the weird thing is, it seems to be working. So I'm just really curious to see how this shakes out. So those are my thoughts on The Bachelor. And quick word about Bachelor Winter Games. It is really fun. I wasn't even going to watch it, but then I dipped a toe in, and now I'm like actively choosing that over the actual Olympics. So I do recommend that.
Right.
Yeah. And for my plug, I don't really have a plug other than my blog, StephanieEarlyGreen.com. So that's it.
Serenity Bunting.
Wow. I don't know what that voice was, but I don't hate it. I am here to talk about the Chris Rock new stand-up special on Netflix. It's called Tambourine. Unconventional spelling of tambourine that is still getting on my nerves. I am usually the last person to be reporting on comedy specials. Did anyone else watch it?
Nope. Have not watched
no.
it.
Nope.
Okay. You are given permission to skip it. I only watched it because I had two different conversations in a single day that referred to it. And I was like, all right, the universe is trying to tell me something. I'm not sure the universe meant that I should watch the whole thing, because it's fine. I mean, the transitions are a little lazy and the end seems calculated, maybe for image rehab purposes a little bit, because he's talking about his divorce and cheating on his ex-wife. And the other issue that I had with it a little bit is, like, there's extremely funny, well-observed bits in it because it's Chris Rock and he could do this in his sleep, but he is in his 50s now, and I feel like maybe he needs to evolve that, like, Chris Rock TM delivery tonally, because it, like, I don't know, he just needs to evolve. But he, you know, there are some good lines in it. It wasn't like, I wasn't mad at having spent an hour on it, and it is only an hour. But if you're sort of like, I don't know, is this his comeback? Like, I mean, first of all, don't call it a comeback. He's been here for years, but that's the problem. He's been kind of right where he is in terms of his stand-up specials for years. And I'd like to see something that reflects, you know, like, we know how good he is, but he's like, he's in this gear and doesn't see any need probably financially to go into another gear. So that's where that is. I laughed a few times. So I wanted to laugh more. My plug is for my music podcast, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I'm the Sarah, spoiler. The Mark is Mark Blankenship. This week, we are going to be ranking Madonna's second greatest hits album. And then the week after that, it's our own Joe Reed talking about the Oscar Best Song nominees for this year. So give that a listen. It's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, and it's on all your favorite podcast apps and your least favorite ones.
It is time for the canon, submitting this week our very own Tara Ariano.
Take it away.
Okay.
Take it away.
God. Okay. I think you should be denied a vote this week. I realize we're going to talk about the real, the New Adventures of Old Christine. And I realize that the multicam sitcom is regarded by many as an old-fashioned relic unworthy of the prestige TV era. But I know for a fact that even my extremely sophisticated fellow hosts treasure such shows. Sarah D. Bunting reveres The Golden Girls. David T. Cole still loves News Radio. I am still entertained by a variety of old school sitcoms, and I'm here today to speak up for one such old school sitcom that I think is largely forgotten, probably even by the Emmy voters that reflexively nominated its lead, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, for Best Actress in each one of its 5 seasons. And that show is, of course, as I said, The New Adventures of Old Christine. And by the way, she actually won the first of those Emmys for season 1. Not to be confused with Dreyfus's first post-Seinfeld sitcom, the much-retooled Watching Ellie, The New Adventures of Old Christine is about the very amicable divorce of Richard, future S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Clark Gregg, and Dreyfus's Christine. Things get moderately less amicable when Christine finds out in the pilot that Richard has started dating a much younger woman played by Emily Rutherford and that she is also named Christine. To differentiate them, it is proposed that this new Christine be called New Christine, leaving Richard's ex-wife to be Old Christine, hence the show's mean title. Also around are Matthew, Old Christine's brother, who lives in her guest house and is played by a pre-ubiquity Hamish Linklater, Richard and Old Christine's intermittently relevant son, Richie, and Marley and Lindsay, Trisha O'Kelly and Alex Cap Horner, rich snobby moms from Richie's expensive private school. At this point in the series that we're going to be discussing, Christine has just broken up with Mr. Harris, Richie's former teacher, played by Blair Underwood, and I considered proposing one of those episodes because I'm fascinated by that character. He was written like women are in bad sitcoms about men in that he never got to do anything or say anything funny and was just there to be objectified, and honestly, I approve. But instead, I went with this episode because it revolves around Christine's post-Mr. Harris heartbreak, which has led her to allow new Christine to fix her up on a blind date, a decision she might not have made otherwise, and thus to season 3, episode 6, annoyingly also titled The New Adventures of Old Christine for reasons that, dear listener, will soon become clear. And here's why I think it belongs in the canon. Number 1, it shows us how Christine's choices with regard to her bad date, spoiler alert, are rooted in her character. The cold open conveys a lot of information, not just what I already noted, which is that she's on the rebound, but that she's very concerned about what other people think about her. She's at the Hollywood Bowl for a classical music performance, something she doesn't actually enjoy because she bid on season tickets in a school auction so that people would think she's smart. Also, she mistakenly thought she was bidding on a cotton candy machine. She then tries to tell Matthew's new girlfriend that she's fine attending the concert without a boyfriend, and though she tries to project the confidence of, as Elaine Bennis's friend Jerry once put it, the office Tina Turner, she does end up canoodling with what Richard has identified as her date, Coleman, the cooler. So Christine is very image conscious, easily shamed, and extremely lonely. Enter her date! Number 2. Christine's date takes her on a real journey. The episode pretty much just has the one plot, which is Christine agrees to go to the next Hollywood Bowl event with a guy who works in the same law office as new Christine. Old Christine enters into this arrangement without knowing anything about this guy beyond what I've just said. This episode aired in the spring of 2008, so you might think it's impossible that Christine wouldn't have demanded to know at least her date's name so that she could Google him, if for nothing else, a photo. However, an episode in the previous season revolves around Christine making a somewhat disastrous email CC blunder, so I buy it. It's not until they're about to sit down in their box that Christine meets her much younger date, Timmy, played by the ever-youthful Ben Feldman, who apparently was 28 at the time but did not look it. Christine is horrified and shocked that new Christine wouldn't have mentioned exactly how big an age difference Christine should expect. Clip 1.
What are you doing to me? Isn't he great? He's 12. Well, I don't think so. I think he's in his 20s. Yeah. What's wrong?
What's wrong?
I'm like 10 years older than him.
Your bra is 10 years older than him.
Yeah. The store where I bought it isn't even open anymore. I don't even think about his age. Age is just a number to me. And he's nice. And you're... single. Who cares about his age?
Yeah, easy for you to say. You've still got elastic in your bra.
Oh, I'm not wearing a bra.
Okay, stop it! Stop it!
When then Christine actually talks to Timmy. However, he turns out to be kind of a smooth-talking gigolo. She discovers that she's susceptible to his compliments and starts thinking maybe this can actually work out. They end up back in his place where they flirt, but it seems as though her body knows something her mind won't accept, because when he kisses her, she can't quite allow herself to kiss him back. And then this happens. Clip two.
I'm not looking. Just getting my face cream.
Mom?
Mom?
What are you doing? I told you I had a date tonight.
This is your date? This is your mom. What the hell are you doing to my son?
Oh, I gotta go.
I'm going with you.
No, you are going nowhere except straight to your room.
You live with your mom?
Where else is he gonna live? He's an intern in a law office. They don't even pay him. He's barely getting college credit.
Oh, my God.
And what is the matter with you? You're 20 years older than him.
That has not been established.
Mom, why don't you just...
Go to your room. Go to your room.
God, I hate you. You ruin everything. Christine, I had a wonderful time. I'll call you. I'm sorry about her.
Oh, my God. Do you have mommy issues? I mean, you might as well be dating me.
Oh, my God.
Go to your room.
Listen to your mother.
While I had no problem with Julia Louis-Dreyfus getting romanced by Ben Feldman, you've seen them, you know they both can get it, I love the episode even more when Christine starts to realize how much Timmy was misrepresenting himself and the story keeps going, unlike in the similar 30 Rock episode Cougars, where Liz's infatuation with Jamie ends as soon as she meets his mom and sees that she and Liz could be clones. The choice on the writer's part ratchets up the absurdity so that Christine flips over into mom mode, a corner Timmy backs her into when Christine's in the middle of telling Matthew about the evening's catastrophe and then finds out that Timmy is there. Clip three.
Is Christine home?
Just 1 minute. Let me check.
Are you kidding me?
Timmy says he's run away from home, all his game having apparently deserted him as soon as his mom came looking for her face cream. He has a full meltdown, and when the noise wakes Richie, Christine ends up having to look after both of them. Clip four.
You know what? No more wine for you.
Yeah, I don't feel so good. All I've had today is wine and fruit roll-ups.
Feel like you need to throw up?
Maybe I just need to lie down for a minute.
Poor little guy.
Can't sleep. Who's that?
It's mommy's friend, Timmy.
Does he go to my school? No. Oh, God, do you?
Christine, I really don't feel so good.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna get you some ginger ale.
He gets to have ginger ale?
Okay, I'll get you both some ginger ale.
Okay. With a curly straw?
You have curly straws?
Matthew, could you please come and help me?
Do you want me to drive him around until he falls asleep?
Before you sniff at this characterization for making Timmy too cartoony, consider how much you might enjoy it if someone were to bring you a ginger ale with a curly straw and then drive you around until you fell asleep. Sounds good, right? Eventually, Timmy's mom comes over to retrieve him, and the single moms bond, single momishly. Timmy's mom talks about her own failed marriage and her gross ex who's currently on his second 20-year-old. Clip five.
What are men thinking?
It makes him feel young.
Really? Because it makes me feel old.
Yeah, that's why I don't even go out anymore. It's not worth it. A TV, warm tub, bottle of wine, that is all I need.
Maybe we should date.
I'm done dating. I've given up.
Oh, I don't want to give up. I mean, dating's horrible, but I have to keep trying. You know, I'm not going to date 20-year-olds anymore, but I don't want to give up.
He told you he was 20?
Please, just take your boy and go.
Christine's had a bad night, but she hasn't given up on love. She shouldn't be so quick to give up on a kid who looks like Ben Feldman, if you ask me, but whatever. Number three. The episode features some excellent drive-by shade from Marley and Lindsay. These are very funny characters who are at their funniest when they're used sparingly, and while they can be really nasty to Christine, they're even better at delivering subtle burns like this one, clip six.
Well, enjoy the concert. You know, I never really thought of you as the classical music type.
Why? We're very sophisticated.
Okay.
It's hard to fully appreciate the comic impact of this moment without seeing Trisha O'Kelly's indulgent, pitying face on that. Okay. But I've watched this episode a lot and it always makes me laugh. Marley and Lindsay also slay in their next scene where they either actually mistake Timmy for Richie or pretend to in order to needle Christine. Honestly, it doesn't matter which. Both are funny. Clip 7.
Wow, you're lucky you sit so still. I have to bring a DVD player for my kids.
Number 4. Matthew gets all the best jokes. My crush on Hamish Linklater started with this series, and I have subsequently followed him through a bunch of TV shows and, when I still lived in New York, 2 plays. Fun fact, did you know his girlfriend is American Horror Story rep player Lily Rabe and that they recently had a baby together? They did. Anyway, here's a supercut of some of Matthew's best lines, clip 8.
His mother caught us kissing on the couch.
Oh my God, is she going to call our mom? You're going to be so grounded.
Hi, Timmy.
Oh, Timmy, perfect.
I ran away from home.
Oh, no, now it's perfect.
I can get my own man.
Yeah, go check your traps.
The New Adventures of Old Christine did not admittedly do much, or maybe really anything, to push the boundaries of what a sitcom could be or do. But honestly, sometimes those shows are exhausting. Community. Old Christine did exactly what I prefer a sitcom to do. Take simple premises and find every available joke its specific characters could make in and about them. This episode does that beautifully. And speaking of beautiful, it also gives us a dose of Ben Feldman, which is always the right call. I hope you also enjoyed it, even or perhaps especially if it was the first episode you'd ever seen of a show you'd never heard of, and that you'll respect what a moonshot this was for me and vote it into the canon. And I propose that we start with Stephanie because she was the one who picked this off our list.
Okay, so my background with this show, I have watched it before a lot. I was basically brainwashed into liking it when I lived in Brazil in 2010 and TV pickings were slim. I would come home from work and I'd have been like speaking Portuguese all day and stuff. And I just wanted American TV and I would watch whatever was on. Like, this is why I've seen a lot of Smallville. Yeah. Or like another show. What was another show I watched in that period? Like Everybody Hates Chris. Like they just buy old, like they buy the franchise rights or whatever and then just show them. Anyway, New Adventures of Old Christine was on all the damn time. And so I started watching it semi against my will. And then I just got sucked in because it's actually really cute and funny. So I was primed to like this episode already because I have fond, like, kind of comfort food memories of the show from when I was like living by myself in a foreign country. So this particular episode, I liked it. I did, as it went along, I laughed more and more, especially as the plot got more and more absurd. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just so funny. I mean, her delivery of these lines is just so perfect. I feel like the writing is sort of like, some of the writing is a bit lame, but she really makes the most of it and she makes it funny, you know, like in another actress's hands, I feel like this could fall kind of flat, but she's really talented. So when you were mentioning in the beginning, the Mr. Harris episodes, mm-hmm. those are the ones I remember most specifically because I love Blair Underwood.
He's good.
And I remember those episodes, not that he was particularly funny, but just like, that's what I think of when I think of the New Adventures of Old Christine. And then as I was trying to recall specific plot points, I couldn't.
Yeah.
So, like that tells me something about this show. So then that makes me think that this particular episode probably does deserve to be in the canon just as much as any other one does because, you know what I mean? It covers most of the bases. Like if I had to make a list of, you know, what is a typical episode of this show entail, it would be, you know, some interaction with Richard and New Christine and Old Christine, some focus on her dating life. It has to give a sense for the character, which, as you pointed out, it does. That has to involve the bitchy ladies from Richie's school. And, you know, it has to be light and fluffy and funny, which it is. So, you know, this is an accurate representation of what the show was usually like. I don't know if it's the funniest or the best, but even if it's like right down the middle, I think it is a pretty typical episode. So I have to think about, you know, what that means for the canon, but I'm leaning towards yes.
I'll take it. Sarah.
I have no idea if it's typical. I had heard of the show. I had no idea it was on as long as it was. Like, I thought it was like a, you know, sort of always embattled to like two seasoner or three seasoner, like happy endings, that they kept moving around in the schedule, which that may have been true. I don't know. But I forgot that she won an Emmy for this, and I forgot that it was on for 5 years. And I forgot Hamish Linklater was in it. His delivery of "you're dating a youngster" was so like Hamishist Linklater delivery. It was great. I did not know that he and Lily Rabe were a couple, and that brings me joy. But yeah, I also wonder if, like, I would like to know Tara's thought process in terms of, like, selecting an episode. And she's like, I don't know how many of these sitcoms I'm going to get over the Buncee transom. So I'm going to have to really start bringing it. Which episode should I? Oh, Ben Feldman. That'll work. Not wrong, wife. Some of this writing did seem a little broad, like Timmy reverting to that level of childlikeness. It was a little over the top, but they really exploited it, and I enjoyed that, like, the pace gathered steam so that by the time it started getting really like unbelievable, then you didn't notice because things were happening really rapidly. And then, you know, there's Linklater like wandering around in not his bathrobe, and he also had a really good, like, that moment where he's like, I'll just leave you two alone, and then something happens and he's like, or I could just stay for a second. Like, he's so good. I always enjoy him so much. And Stephanie's point is also well taken, that Julia Louis-Dreyfus can really sell some writing that you give it to someone else and it's like, that's not really going to work. But she has a, you know, long resume of playing basically variations on this person, which she's very good at. And it continues today. And it goes back to, whatever that sitcom was that she was on, like, in the 80s, it involved a daycare.
The one about the daycare?
Courtney Thorne Smith, that's the one.
Day by Day, I think it was called.
Yes. Oh, God, so bad. But I think that came on after something else I watched, so I watched it. Life with four channels. It was not pretty. Yeah, I thought this was really good. I was interested to watch more, which is one of my personal canon criteria. Is like, do I want to keep going to the next one? So, yeah, this was very enjoyable. Ben Feldman looking, I mean, not quite illegally cute and young. Just
the haircut doesn't help.
Cute and young. But yes, he's adorable. He's wee. But he is adorable. Hamish Linklater's hair is a super nope, though. Like, ooh.
It's an ongoing problem.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's a process. Yeah, so let's see if we're gonna kiss this episode or smell its head, shall we? is Dave getting a vote, or are we not doing
go
this
ahead,
with
Dave?
All right, I don't know what you guys are smoking, because this is a super average episode of an average TV show. Like, this is so far away from canon material. I don't know what the fuck you guys are going on about.
Somebody,
you guys want
to get off
picture
sick.
Ben Fel- you guys want to ogle Ben. Hey, you guys want to ogle Ben Feldman? Just do a Google search. You don't have to watch a TV show and abduct it into the canon just because it's got a pretty boy in it. There's nothing beyond typical sitcominess going on here that would elevate it into canon material. The show is just like, tell you what, Tara, if you can ever induct an episode of King of Queens into the canon, I promise you I'll revisit this
show. Oh my God,
show,
challenge fucking accepted. I bet I can find one.
Because this show is just like, it's fine. Just like King of Queens is on TV. I can be in the same room as King of Queens. I could be in the same room as this, but I'm not going to bring my eyes up. You know,
if you could be in the same room as Tara after this rant. Jeez.
Oh,
It's just a very B-minus sitcom that Tara happens to like. How many times did you guys say, oh, the writing is poor, but, you know, she manages to sell it. The writing is poor and she manages to sell it. Maybe it's not canon worthy. Like, maybe the writing should be great and that her acting makes it transcendent. Like that's canon, okay. Canon territory. So for me, it's a no vote. Screw you. Screw the world. I'm down from my high, and this show did it. All right, let's put it to a vote. I say no. Stephanie Early Green, what say you?
I say yay.
Yeah, you're just doing that because of my impassioned no. Sarah.
Well, it doesn't really matter why, but I'm definitely doing it because of your impassioned no. Just kidding. I was going to vote yes, and I am still going to vote yes. So
no. Wow. Next up, Mom.
All right, that means The New Adventures of Old Christine, Season 3, Episode 6, also called The New Adventures of Old Christine. You're hereby ducted into the extra Hot Gray Cannon. For some reason.
Okay.
Americans love a winner. Yeah. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has her winner.
Me, but also the CW, which is going to 6 nights of programming a week, up from 5. It will now be also airing shows on Sundays, which it used to do, or I guess the WB used to do it. Maybe UPN never did.
Is it time to guess what other DC comics? Oh, it's the Wonder Twins and their little annoying monkey, the show.
Yeah, they have a lot of shows that they like cycle in and out. Like they have a few that are only like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. They're only 13 episoders. So maybe they'll do more of those. I don't know. I feel like it makes more sense to add Sundays to the lineup and stop showing originals on Fridays because that can't possibly be helping Jane the Virgin. But no one asked me. Anyway.
The amazing thing about the CW is they have all these shows. Now knowing that they're adding a new show, somehow the Aquaman pilot they made wasn't good enough for them. That's what boggles the mind.
Yeah.
Although, you know what? Honestly, it's probably because they're trying to make it during the California drought. Aquaman's just sitting there flopping on the desert floor. Help! Flop, 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 flop. Anyways, back to the winner of the week.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. Loser
Dave.
Of the week.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Guys.
You done? Tara started this.
Is that it?
No, that's not it. Arrested Development alums not having a good week. Scott Baio accused of sexual abuse by a second Charles in Charge cast member. This is probably not over. And then Jeffrey Tambor is officially out at Transparent and is being real ungracious about it. On top of it, like they did an investigation and were like, okay, so yeah, you got to go. And he's like, my lawyer, like, all right, you know, just like that could be true. You could have a legit defense. Your play publicly is to shut it.
Still got your Sabra hummus ads for now.
Speaking about hummus. Do you know what time it is?
Chickpea time?
Chickpea time.
Hey!
All right, everybody, this is the third game time of the season. Value guests have 2 points. Everybody else has no points. No points for everybody else. Today we are playing Where in the World is This Show by Suli, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of his choosing. This is sort of a follow-up to his Where in the United States Does This Show Take Place one.
Yeah.
Except this international.
Okay.
I am going to read you the synopsis of a fictional show that combines a country with an existing TV show. You try to figure out the mashup title that they create.
Got it.
All right.
Okay. Yep.
21 questions this week, so it should be relatively short. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Let's go Sarah, then Stephanie, then Tara. Are we ready to play Where in the World is This Show?
Yes.
Yes.
Please, for the love of God, remember your order because I'm still pretty high and there's no way I can do it on my own.
Yep. So like every other week? Got it.
You can't be sure or cocky now that you got your vote in for your stupid show. All right, here we go.
Trying to think of what King and Queens I'm going to submit. It's going to be great.
All right. Tara starts off the game with -3 points.
You forgot to ask about steel meals, so I will just tell you.
Thank you.
Sarah has one. Valued guests have one.
so high. All right. Number one, Sarah D. Bunting. Contest format show in which a celebrity is paired with a native Parisian to see who can wear the coolest beret, bake the best baguette, and capitulate to the Germans the fastest.
Wow. A celebrity. I'm sorry. Can you just read the first phrase again, please?
A contest format show in which a celebrity is paired with a native Parisian expert to see who can wear the coolest beret, bake the best baguette, and capitulate to the Germans the fastest.
Okay. I don't know. Celebrity Apprend France?
Is it?
Incorrect.
Can I Prancing with the Stars?
Prancing with the Stars.
Oh, yes. Gotcha.
Just 1 point for these, right? There's no
Just
no
one
hints.
Point. Yeah, I'm just doing one point across the board. Yep.
Okay.
South American men from the Andes dress up in massive wigs and with makeup each week to perform as queens to impress their Incan judge and its guest judges.
Okay.
This is for Stephanie. Where in the world is that show?
It sounds like Incan, Peru. Peru Paul's Drag Race.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, here's Tara's first question.
Yep.
A children's show in which four fashionably dressed, brightly colored, androgynous humanoid creatures eat pizza, ride gondolas, and watch pasta making documentaries on each other's stomachs.
Italy-tubbies?
Italy-tubbies, yeah, sure. Italy-tubbies. All right, back to Sarah. CBS's newest sitcom, set in 1960s West Berlin, a jingle writer was getting along fine until his brother and his brother's young son move across the street from East Berlin.
I want to say 2.5 Munich, but I know that's not right. 2.5 Germans? Oh, really?
Okay. Well, the country's got to be... Yeah, you're close. 2.5 Germany. I'll give it to you. But
yeah.
The country's... Yeah. Okay. A documentary-style show covers the factual narratives of pharaohs, pyramids, and sphinxes, both before and after they were famous.
Jeez. Before and after they were famous. I feel like... I don't know.
Steel Meal? Is it the Egypt True Hollywood Story?
Hey!
Correct. All right, this show follows the trials and tribulations of a couple and their three children way down under. The family dynamics are complicated as the father dies when a faulty didgeridoo burns down the family house.
This is Oz. This is Australia.
This is Australia.
Faulty didgeridoo.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... I had to rewrite that one. That's the best I could come up with, guys.
I finally watched that episode last night, and it is bad.
Full disclosure, I told this Tara. It was about 3 days after the Super Bowl when I turned to her and said, oh, I think I finally get why everybody was talking about crockpots for the past month. Netflix show where a 13th century Venetian explorer, done with his exploits in China, attempts to locate Copenhagen and other cities of the same nation by yelling his first name a lot.
That's cute. Danmarco Polo.
The Porter family are taking a family vacation in Dublin, but unfortunately are sucked into an alternate prehistoric universe where they must live in a treehouse and manage life with dinosaurs and leprechauns.
Ireland of the Lost?
Hey!
A Secret Service agent moves to Oslo in search of two federal agents who have gone missing in a snowy town. He soon learns that he may never get out of this land of Vikings alive.
CIA agent goes looking for...
Secret Service agent.
Oh, I got it. Norwayward Pines.
Norwayward Pines, correct. In a surprising twist, a precocious young orphan fails to win the hearts of her new Canadian caretakers. So they ship her to the world's largest island, a frozen wasteland next door to their own country.
Can you read the first part again? I'm sorry.
In a surprising twist, a precocious young orphan fails to win the hearts of her new Canadian caretakers. So they ship her to the world's largest island, a frozen wasteland next door to their own country.
Okay. Anne of Greenland Gables.
Correct. We are now all Domer for thinking of this possible spinoff set on the western half of Hispaniola.
Well, it's either Dominican Republic or Haiti. And I don't know. Sorry, I don't know what the Under the Dome spinoff is.
We're not talking spinoffs. We're talking about shows that are resetting countries. Oh, they got to connect somehow. They're a mashup
type. Oh, got it. Under... UNDR the
Dome?
That also
works.
Clever.
Like Dominican Republic?
I guess.
Under the Dominican Republic.
Under the Dominican Republic. We're going to go that day. See? Yeah.
Republic.
You didn't give up and you got the point.
Okay.
Number 12, taking us into our first and only mid-game score break.
Yep.
After living as a mole woman and moving to New York City, the lead character of this show decides to be completely neutral in all things, moves to the Alps to enjoy life in a ski chalet.
Unbreakable Kimmy Switzerland.
Yeah, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmitzerland.
Okay.
Wow.
I didn't try saying that. All right, that is question number 12. We're already over halfway done. Let's hear dump scores, please.
All right. Very close game. Stephanie has 3 points. Sarah and I are tied with 4 each.
All right, that is close, but that also means...
Come on, Stephanie.
Stephanie is in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Answer one half of these Trivial Pursuit TV box questions right.
Oh,
you will get 2 points. Your first category is classics. Who often exclaimed, "Jeepers!" on The Adventures of Superman?
Lois.
That's Jimmy Olsen. What 230-pound alien pet sleeps in the Tanner family's garage or laundry room?
Alf.
Yeah!
Yay!
This is drama. What Dallas character... What percentage of drama questions do you think are Dynasty in
50.
Dallas? Yeah, at least, right?
Yes.
What Dallas character was Cliff and Pamela's half-sister?
I've never seen Dallas. Betty.
What if it was?
What if it was? Catherine
I wish.
Wentworth. Catherine okay. Wentworth. All right, you need 2 of these 3 questions.
Okay.
What space-age cartoon family had a robot maid named Rosie?
The Jetsons.
Yeah!
All right, you need 1 of these last 2.
Okay.
This is Stars. What 50s sitcom star once sighed, "I look like an actress, but I feel like a housewife"? 50s sitcom star once sighed.
Lucille Ball.
Yay!
Correct.
Stephanie pulls into the lead.
Woo-hoo!
What network gave the world The Simpsons? Just for shits and giggles, doesn't matter.
Fox,
sure.
Nicely done.
Well,
that means that you are now in the lead.
That's correct.
This has never happened before and will never happen again.
That's the spirit.
There we go. Look, if The New Adventures of Olcastrine can win the canon, anything's possible.
True.
Back to the game.
I'm going to be sleeping on the lawn tonight, you guys.
A 15-minute... Sorry, what was that?
I said I'm going to be
a 15-minute stop-motion sketch comedy show riffing on the pop culture tropes of an East Coast African nation.
where in the world is that show?
I don't have
15 minutes.
That doesn't help.
Stop
doesn't
motion. Help. Sketch comedy.
Doesn't help. Sorry. I don't know.
Robot Chickenia. Robot Chickenia. All right. NBC is dusting off this early 90s high school sitcom, but putting a 2018 worldly spin on it. Screech, Zach, and the whole gang now reside in the capital of the EU, eat waffles, and joke around with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Saved by the Belgium.
Investigators navally solve crimes in the section of Hollywood between Little Vietnam and Thailand Village.
This feels like a personal attack because I don't know geography. Between Vietnam and Thailand?
Thailand, yeah.
Gonna guess. NCI Laos?
No, I gotta give it to you. NCIS Laos Angeles.
Oh, Los Angeles, I see.
All right. Okay. An agency exec reveling in the glory of his Coca-Cola ad campaign victory moves to an island off the east coast of Africa to continue his many vices in peace.
Madagascar men?
The wacky misadventures of a cartoon Australian wallaby and his friends as he manages his transition to North African life.
Morocco's modern life.
An alien from planet Urk, whose mission is to conquer Earth and enslave the human race, along with his malfunctioning robot servant Gir, that's G-I-R, has crash-landed in sub-Saharan Africa.
I don't know what the show is, so I don't know. Don't know.
That's Invader Zimbabwe. Sure. Worried about their boy being caught up in the crime and bad influences of West Philadelphia, their parents send their son to the only logical place, a Central American tourist destination. Their official language is English, and there are beaches. Perfect.
West I know it's Costa Rica. I don't know the show, so I don't know.
Well,
I have the show, but not the country.
I know it.
Do you have a?
Can I say it?
You have a. If you want to use your steel mail, you can.
Yeah, I'm going to use it. The Fresh Prince of Belize.
Oh, nice.
Correct. Well done.
We are now out of steel meals.
All right. And that was Sarah's last question, by the way. So here's your last question, Tara.
Nope, that next one is for me.
That's right. Glad you've been paying attention. Wanting to expand his talk show empire / pseudo psychology snake oil business, in brackets, in my opinion, this daytime host is starting a new show with a live audience in a South Asian island nation.
I want to say it's Dr. Oz, but, can't think of any Southeast Asian islands that...
I don't think Dr. Oz... Well, I should give it.
I mean, when you said snake oil, that's what jumps to mind. I'm just trying to think. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
You've already won, so it's okay.
Dr. Philippines.
Dr. Philippines.
Oh, Dr. Phil. Okay.
All right. Last question of the game. A CBS sitcom where it is clear that each person around has a fondness for this Italian-American man who currently lives north of China.
Tara? Yeah. everybody loves. I don't know. Mongolia?
Yes.
I have no idea. I don't know.
I haven't heard a correct answer yet.
Everybody loves Mongolia. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, you got to remember what the point of the game was. Everybody loves Ray Mongolia. Everybody loves Mongolia is probably just a show on the Travel Channel.
It doesn't matter. I would have lost it.
All right. I got a couple shits and giggles here if you want. We can do it for Steel Meals.
Sure.
Okay.
I got two extra questions for Steel Meals. First person to shout out the correct answer wins the Steel Meal. All right?
Yep.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
For the next season of CBS's quirky nerd sitcom, the whole gang travels to former East Pakistan to check on Raj's distant relatives.
Big Bangladesh Theory?
Big Bangladesh Theory is correct. That's one for Sarah. Next question. There we go.
Well done.
You know it's Trump's anti-immigrant America when John Walsh has a new program in which he lists off the worst criminals from the Republic of China.
America's Most Taiwanted?
Sarah got it. All right. I also have a tiebreaker in which we're going to play for 3 day points.
Oh, shit.
These are just extra questions I didn't use. Here's a tiebreaker. It's hot potato style, guys.
Hot potato. Hot potato. Hot potato. Potato. Hot potato. Hot potato. Hot potato. Hot potato. Hot potato.
Based on the premise of this game, I will let you start listing off locations mentioned in the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego theme song. There are cities, states, countries, and one body of water from around the world.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
As soon as you can't name one, you're out of the game, and then the last person standing, no matter where they are in the order, will get a delicious 3 Dave Steel Meal point collection thing.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. I guess you're getting 3 Dave points, too, by the sound of it.
Okay.
So here we go.
Hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato.
Tara, you're first. Go.
Lima.
Lima.
I never heard this theme song in my life, so France. Okay, that's that.
Eat hot potatoes.
China.
South Korea? Okay.
Okay, Belize.
Zimbabwe?
Berlin.
Czechoslovakia, RIP.
Shoot, I'm out of... California.
No.
Oh.
Final scores, please. Tara Ariano.
Sarah and I tied with 5 each. And once again, the valued guest is our victor, Stephanie, finished with 8 points.
Well done, Stephanie.
Very well.
Thanks, guys.
Valued guest.
Nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Valued guests are on a tear.
They are.
Well, that is it for this episode of Extra Hat. Great. We poured ourselves a special cocktail of Gatorade, Crystal Pepsi, and Surge to discuss the Netflix show Everything Sucks. We then went around the dial with stops at Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, The Bachelor, and Chris Rock's latest Netflix offering. Somehow, The New Adventures of Orchestrine Season 3, Episode 6, also called The New Adventures of Orchestrine, was inducted into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and completing a natural hat trick, Stephanie, playing on the value guest team, won, making the season scores 0-0-3.
Yeah.
Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and I am still quite high. On behalf of Tara Arrieta.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, I'm not wearing a bra.
And Stephanie Early Green.
All that in a bag of chips.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Please tune in next time, right here. Same extra. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, she sneaks around the world from Vienna to Carolina. She's a sticky-fingered filcher from Berlin down to Belize. Take me for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
Steal their soul in South Korea. Make another country uncle from the Red Sea to Greenland. They'll be singing the blues. Well, they never Arkansas her steal the mingo from the jungle.
Where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
She can do a Botswana, to Thailand, Milandia, Amsterdam, Mali, to Bali, Ohio, and back!
Well, she'll ransack Pakistan and run a scan in Scandinavia. Then she'll stick them up down under and go big pocket birth. She was the miss and misdemeanor when she stole the beans from Lima. Tell me,
where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Tell me.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Nothing you've ever heard before.
Oh, cool. Like what?
I don't know. How can I explain if you've never heard it?
You can try.
This is Extra Hot Great, episode 192. Dave's a little high on drugs. Dave's a little high on drugs. I am cafeteria served Gatorade David D. Cole, and I'm here with Surgeon General Sarah D. Budding.
Feed the rush.
Crystal Waters impersonator Tara Ariano.
Respect my belly neck top.
And Chunk. The music stopped, guys.
Yeah, well, we didn't know if that was intentional, so we were just letting you continue. At least I was.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.